so much of observability today is send us everything you can, all your information, your metrics, logs, traces, events, etc. We'll store it for a long time. We'll charge you through the nose to query it, to use it, to whatever, right? To have access to these features. But it's up to you as a human to interact with the system, to interpret the data correctly, to configure the right alerts. And there is a monumental amount of toil involved in that customization, that maintenance, the training of people, the building of tools on top of it.
Welcome to the Reliability Rebels podcast, where we improve production by challenging the status quo. Your host, Armin Astani from Chert Omodo.
Check one, check two.
Reliability Rebels.
Check one, check two.
Reliability Rebels.
Check, 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 check.
Reliability Rebels.
Welcome to the Reliability Rebels podcast, where we explore how to make software and systems more reliable by challenging the status quo. I'm your host, Amin Astani. Before observability, there was plain old monitoring, mostly about whether our servers or production systems were up or down. We didn't have SLOs, composable dashboards, or queryable time series databases. If you wanted to know what was happening in production, you would SSH into your system, hope for the best. Capacity planning, guesswork. Incident response, manual. And running a large-scale system with those tools, from experience, frankly, a pain in the ass. Fast forward to today, our tools are far more capable, but the pain hasn't disappeared, it's shifted. Observability now eats up 15 to 25% of many companies' infrastructure costs. In one extreme case, I saw a team get hit with a $50,000 monthly bill, just for metrics. We're awash in dashboards and data, but the real question is, are we any better off? Building dashboards that actually deliver signal over noise has become a job in itself. So today, we're taking a trip down memory lane, exploring the evolution of monitoring and observability, the new pain points it's created, and where we go from here. With that, let's welcome today's guest, Aaron Pacheco, better known as Chico. He's the founder and CEO of Otterman.ai, formerly at New Relic, and fun fact, my old work spouse. On top of that, he is a published fantasy author. Wonderful. Chico, great to see you, buddy.
So good to see you again, Amin. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So for our listeners, let's set the stage by telling us a little bit about yourself. Interesting person, obviously, and how you got into tech in the first place.
You know, it's a funny story. I mean, I actually dabbled in website development. I mean, even as far back as the like mid to late 90s, it was just a fun side project for me in like middle school and high school. But I never thought I would end up making a career of it. You know, I wanted to go into TV shows and movies and create the next X-Men or Harry Potter. So web building was always just a hobby of mine. But, you know, after going to college, after spending some time in the industry, I realized that it wasn't really sustainable to stay in the Boston area entertainment industry. So what I did instead is I took a chance. I applied to a hosting company that you and I both worked at so I could be a tech support intern. Little known fun fact, the only reason they hired me, given my severe lack of credentials, was because I had reverse engineered a content management system into a PHP-based Star Trek game. And they're like, all right, maybe this kid has some potential. So I landed in frontline tech support and just over the course of years, worked my way up the ranks until I was running a, you know, multi-million dollar hosting platform as the lead product manager. So it was quite the journey we went on together, I'd say.
Indeed. Yep. Definitely remember the early days, the questions, the eagerness to learn. It's always been fun working with you from the support side to product management, where we were tackling pretty interesting problems in terms of how to operate our flagship. But yeah, definitely a pleasure.
Yeah, and I'd say we saw some really interesting things along the way, which would be really helpful. You know, I think a lot of people go through what we went through, which is, you know, the maturity from really simple tools to having to have cutting edge advanced tools. You know, I recall that being a really big problem for us early on, and it took us years to go through that transition.
Yes. So in the beginning of our evolution, I think if we're looking at it in terms of observability, since that's pertinent to our discussion here today, we started with Nagios. And
Nagios, CheckMK, some really custom logic for our given use case, right? And it was what we need. It's like many companies go through, right? We spun up what was available at the time quickly to have something for then, but didn't really have the opportunity to scale it until it became a bottleneck in and of itself.
Right. And I mean, usually in smaller organizations like ours, the focus was get the product out the door and in the customer's hands. It wasn't really about investing in observability or investing in those tools. We were very revenue driven, as many startup organizations are. So that creates the scenario where your tools do encounter bottlenecks. I mean, back to the Nagios example, we had to make several modifications to the architecture of that system in order for us to keep up with the disk IO bottleneck of just storing all of the metrics for all of the servers that we were running that were exponentially growing.
Yeah. And I recall too, you know, when in that mode, like you said, you know, when companies are trying to innovate quickly and just get the bare bones tooling out there to run the business, to diagnose, to troubleshoot, to catch issues, you know, a lot of the focus is on how can I get something out there that just does the bare minimum. But I think every company, and even this is even true 15 years later, right? We're still seeing this with emerging companies. They get the bare bones tool out there. Today, it's more often Prometheus, CloudWatch, Sentry, right? But back then, Nagios, CheckMK, custom solutions. And, you know, I recall as we were trying to troubleshoot issues, you know, we'd be in a case where we're looking at one of 36 alerts that may be going off at any point in time, and you click into one of them and you get very, very specific graphs that may or may not take a minute or two to load, right?
And
goodness, like the way that added up, every single incident, right? You know, maybe one incident, it's not as big of a deal, a minute here, a minute there. But when you start scaling across dozens of people around the world, dozens of incidents, my goodness, that time just started adding up like crazy at a certain point in the company's maturity.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. Early game, there were a static set of metrics, and those were, you know, configured in the platform. And hopefully 70 to 80% of the time, you look at those graphs and you're like, okay, I have a clue. But some of the time for the really, really interesting stuff, you had to SSH. You had to run the CLI tools. And I think even in present day, you still have to do that in the corner cases. But you still really need, you still really depended on SSH to just understand what the heck was going on. And observability at best gave you maybe the first clue.
Agreed. And, you know, and what we found, I think, as well, was not just issues with how we were monitoring, but also what we were monitoring. What were the signals we were creating? And at the time, I think one of the biggest bottlenecks for us as a business was, well, really twofold. One was, why did it take so much effort for us to add new monitoring, right? It was almost an act of Congress to convince people that a new check needs to be added, because what if this situation, what if it creates more noise, right? That was one of the issues that you and I had dealt with very early on, as we were helping on opposite sides of the table optimize monitoring for support and for operations. And then I recall the second problem being we didn't have the data we needed to justify the company's investment in better tooling and better monitoring. And that required orchestrated effort across two teams to implement better root cause tracking and reporting, both on the customer facing support side and on the internal operation side.
Oh, interesting. That's right. There is the problem of let's get the business case for monitoring. Yeah. Let's explore that a little bit and give some context, right? So for organizations that want new tools, maybe those tools require a significant amount of engineering investment or capital investment. You have to be able to express in time and money what the impact would be if we didn't have this thing. And yes, you and I did quite a bit of work. We're not even talking about monitoring. We're talking about basically making sure that engineers track their time and that they classified incidents and manual labor, so that way we had an understanding in terms of the amount of operational cost it was to maintain the status quo. And with that information, it made it a lot easier for us to go to C-level and say, hey, listen, the current situation is expensive to maintain. And if we invested in these things, we will get a better result.
Yeah. And I feel like what you've just touched upon, you know, we mentioned a few things so far, right? When you start with really simple tooling and then it becomes the bottleneck in an organization. We talked about how, you know, early organizations inherently can make decisions quickly. They'll make changes on the fly. And then in later growth stage organizations, you know, it requires, like I said, an act of Congress to convince people that something needs to be done. But we also hit upon a really important point, which is, you know, something you and I have discussed at length before, that SREs in particular have a very thankless job, in part because, you know, they come in, they exist to try and make things better, but their job is fundamentally challenging because they have to convince people to do things they haven't been doing before, to spend time in places that maybe don't seem obvious as priorities, and to get money spent where it's not currently being spent. And all of that is an uphill battle. You know, for you and I, how we saw that manifest wasn't just in convincing our company at the time to invest hundreds of thousands of dollars in an enterprise monitoring solution. It was in convincing them before that, that there was a problem worth solving. And we found ourselves in an interesting position. I don't know if you remember this, but, you know, me in support, you in operations, are having to convince our teams that they need to start putting root causes on their tickets. They need to track their time. And now suddenly we're getting resistance from the team we're trying to help because we need that data to justify the investment. We need that data to justify that there is enough business pain and enough opportunity to improve their quality of life. So now, you know, you and I, and I imagine many of your listeners are dealing with this as well. They feel like they're in between a rock and a hard place because you're trying to help these engineering teams improve their quality of life. They're resistant to change, right? And then you're trying to help the business improve their business outcomes, but they're resistant to change, investment, right? Shifting priorities that could mean this fancy feature they want done earlier is going to have to wait a few extra weeks. It puts us in the middle in a really untenable position, but it's the battle we have to fight because we know it improves both business outcomes and quality of life.
No, 100%. I think a missing essential that teams don't spend enough time defining that helps solve that problem is a good vision. And I know that sounds very manager leadership type idea and skill, but it's true. Being able to convey, hey, this is the world that we're trying to go to here, and if you work with us and participate in what it is that we're doing, you're going to be able to go to this new way of working where you're not getting paged all the time, and it's easier for you to solve problems, and more time is spent on the things you're actually hired to do. And I think that was, you know, there is a social element to getting new tools, new ways of working out the door. And you're right, we were caught between a rock and a hard place because we were prioritizing work that was mostly feature driven. Great, revenue is important, but when we're starting to have more and more friction in how we deliver that software, we need to quantify that. We need to display that. We need to use that as a hard data point in discussing what to do next. So, of course, you're talking about SREs and the problems they have to solve and the broad discipline they have to engage in. You're a man after my own heart. Once again, I swoon.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things, you know, teams and businesses can choose to let the status quo continue, but at a certain point, the scale, it actually does become crippling, right? It gets to the point where instead of spending 70% on innovation and 30% on toil, you're spending 70% on toil and 30% on innovation. And the bill comes due, right? The piper comes a calling, and you find yourself, and you and I, again, multiple times in our career dealt with this, where we said it's just not sustainable to have these teams reacting all the time. We have to get ahead of it. And then suddenly people are willing to buy in, but they need data to justify that X should be delayed, that Y should be spent, that Z should be done. And, you know, it becomes a process of similar to diagnostics. What is the nature of the issue? Can you wrap your hands around it? Do you know how big it is? Do you know, can you justify a shift in priorities, a shift in expense towards fixing this? Because I know X improvement will come when it's done.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So I think that paints a very clear picture as to the problems that we were facing in our personal experience, but also I'm sure that parallels a lot of listeners' experience. Let's take a step forward and discuss what we did next. What did we do to improve the situation?
You know, for us, we had to actually go and justify an investment in an enterprise observability solution. So, you know, that required us not just to get a bunch of data from our respective teams, but to build an alliance with other executives and teams in the company to convince them that their quality of life would be improved, their business outcomes would be better if we just rallied together and made a case for a better future. Right. And, you know, that required us to do a variety of things. We need to have better logging. We needed to have, you know, APM functionality for our customers and ourselves so that we could diagnose issues faster and optimize more easily. But we also needed to move away from the legacy monitoring mechanisms like Nagios and CheckMK towards something that was more robust. And for us at the time, that was a solution like SignalFX, where you know, we could now throw data more easily at a solution. It takes a few minutes to send more data in. We can create robust custom dashboards, more robust alerts, per team features, right? And that was a huge uphill battle for us. But remember, too, we were moving from a really simplistic monitoring implementation to something that was super powerful, super scalable, and would unblock our ability not just to monitor more effectively, but to diagnose more effectively, to resolve more effectively, to do capacity planning, and to start getting ahead of the issues that we were going to be facing moving forward, right? We needed a foundation for our automations, our toolings, our analytics, and eventually even our customer-facing features could be powered by this sort of powerful backend. So as I recall, you know, you and I, we had to do a vendor analysis, as so many teams do. What's the right solution for this? Do we stick with the folks we know, the vendors that we already have relationships with, or do we go with a new one? And I think as true as it was then, it is true today that these solutions are not cheap. You have to make a serious investment, and it's, you know, it's orders of magnitude of like multiple full-time employees to get some of these tools and take advantage of that scale. So for us, it was about who is the right vendor? Is this worth the investment? How are we making up for, you know, the money that's going to be diverted to this instead of teams growing, right? It was a significant battle. But now if we fast forward, I think, to where you and I were a year later, we made the business case, we picked a vendor, we implemented it, we spent a lot of time together refining custom dashboards for each team, each use case. We created one for our customer-facing teams versus our ops and engineering teams, and started building out automations around it. And now the company is starting to pivot from constant reaction and long incidents to starting to plan ahead, starting to build automations that I think at one point, didn't we take an audit backlog that was something like 500 tickets deep, and we built tooling that automated that process down to the point where there was a zero ticket backlog 2 weeks after the tool was released as GA internally?
That sounds about right. Yeah, you're talking about per customer capacity planning. It was a major part of a customer's life cycle, because back in those days, infrastructure was based on EC2. It wasn't based on containers. Scaling up and down was a bit difficult. So there was a need to decide how much infrastructure a particular customer needed. And some customers were gigantic because they were handling, you know, tons of web requests. So yes, that was definitely one of the major benefits. I think another benefit was cultural in nature. So we got SignalFX, which is a time series database and dashboarding solution. It came from engineers who used to work at Facebook. It's a successor to ODS, but we had it, but we needed to actually use it. So that was one of the things that my SRE organization needed to do, which was to introduce the concept of SLOs to teams. So at least teams were starting to get the top level metrics into SignalFX and be able to understand the health of their services, which I think is really like the first step to, okay, what metrics do we put in SignalFX? How do we get, you know, value out of it? And then how do we explain? So that was an important piece as well. I remember spending a lot of time building like an example service with defined SLOs and example dashboards that teams can then copy. So that way they weren't, you know, starting from scratch, trying to use the systems efficiently.
Yeah. And I recall too, you know, again, it's a classic example of, you know, sometimes the medicine does make you feel better, right? People were highly resistant to learning the tool. We had to do a lot of trainings. We had to do a lot of, you know, collaborating and building bridges with folks who were highly resistant to learning a new thing. You know, these engineers are underwater. They really are. They're, you know, they're often in thankless roles, just being shoveled piles of, let's call it, fertilizer for growth, right? Like, and what is it they say that engineers, and especially operations engineers, they're like mushrooms. You just put them in a dark corner and feed them stuff until they grow, right? Like
that's
what our teams were dealing with, is that sort of treatment. And you know, and so many teams I think feel that way, at least
certainly.
And what we were doing was helping shine a light on them and give them the insights they need to grow and learn and act more effectively. So, you know, we had to do the trainings, we had to do custom dashboards, custom tools. Once we started having access to this tooling, I think within hours of implementing it the first time, we found $1 million in cold infrastructure that people had just forgotten about. Nobody could have seen with the old monitoring solution. But now it's like, hey, why do we have this fleet of EC2 hosts that's completely idle? You know, it was a product that people had completely forgotten about, and they didn't realize how stagnant and large the fleet had become. So ironically, this thing that took us months and months and months to convince people to invest in literally paid for itself 2x within a month of implementation, because we found all that cold infrastructure, not to mention the efficiency gains of the team and our ability to be more proactive with customers instead of reactive. I remember it being wildly positively impactful for all those teams.
Yeah, definitely a fringe benefit. Was, oh, look, here's all of this infrastructure that we haven't looked at in quite some time. What is its purpose? Oh, it doesn't have a purpose. Turn it off. Yes, definitely. I mean, having the rule that every piece of infrastructure is being tracked and can be observed really does change the game, because then you have a clear understanding of everything that's happening in your fleet, and that makes it easier for you to make decisions regarding them. That makes a whole lot of sense. And yes, I do remember that and being feeling that was very ironic that all of the effort involved led to an immediate payoff. All right. So that's what we did to improve the situation. We introduced SignalFX, particularly time series as a metric store. We introduced the concept of dashboarding. We enabled teams to implement their own dashboards. We've created some processes around it through, you know, SRE practice like SLOs. Great. And that was a lot of significant progress. But as you and I both know very clearly, the story of evolving observability and how to gather metrics or infrastructure and making good decisions, that story is far from over. So now in the current present day, what kinds of problems do you see in the current observability landscape?
You know, it's funny. I mean, you know, we now, years removed from when we were working together, we're seeing the same problems today that we were seeing at the end of our tenures at that organization, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, if we walk back really quick, you know, we went from quickly implemented monitoring to just get off the ground to having best-in-class solutions for logging, APM and metrics. And it was night and day difference for our teams and our business to have access to that visibility. Sure. But the world has moved on from those best-in-class point solutions. Remember, there were always a bunch of APM vendors, there were a bunch of metric vendors, there were a bunch of log vendors. And in the time since that period, they've started consolidating and conglomerating. Yes. Through acquisitions, through tooling build-out. Vendors would want, they wanted to become the all-in-one single pane of glass solution, so they either acquired or built the areas that they had gaps. You know, it's how Datadog and Splunk came out on top. You know, Dynatrace is up there as well, and a lot of obviously noteworthy other high-end competitors. But you know, we started to see an emergence of a new problem, and I think in my research since, it hasn't gotten any better. So let's talk through a few of those points. One was,
sure, please.
Observability gets more expensive the longer you use it, right? As your business grows, your bill grows. Mm-hmm. But a lot of companies are not seeing a proportional increase in value for their spend. Mm-hmm. You know, we were dealing with that when we were working together, where, you know, if you're not dealing with, you know, unplanned increases in your costs year over year, sometimes 20, 30, 40, or 50%, right? You're dealing with unplanned overages in term. Right. Yeah. You're suddenly having to firefight to get either more budget or, you know, engineering time to drop the data you're sending. Mm-hmm. So we were dealing with the cost vector of it. You know, the fact that we're dealing with multiple vendors was hurting us on both the procurement and renewal front, but also now teams are having to learn multiple tools. They're having to figure out how to navigate the APM interface versus the log interface versus the metrics interface. Mm-hmm. Not just the learning. I think at one point they had two or three different query languages to learn, one for the log product, one for the metric product, one for the APM product.
Yes.
Actually, I recall SignalFX was good in the sense that they were a point and click interface, so we could get away from the custom queries. But then beyond that, now the teams are having to work across tools. Okay, this site is down or this host is down. Is it in the logging solution? Is the data in the APM? Is the data in SignalFX in the metric solution?
Right.
That hasn't gotten any better. You know, if you talk to any major observability vendor today, and I've worked at one, so I've seen this firsthand, most customers never successfully consolidate onto that single pane of glass, that single solution. They have their monitoring tool. They may have, some of them are still living with remnants of SolarWinds. They're still using a different security tool or a SIEM or intrusion detection. They have a cost monitoring tool. So the amount of time and money it takes to consolidate becomes prohibitive, because now it's like, I could save several hundred thousand or a couple million dollars, but the amount of effort that goes into this consolidation and that risk is substantial, right? So you end up, we were ending up in a world then, and people are still dealing with it now, five, 8 years later, where there are still multiple vendors at play. Even all-in-one solutions aren't doing everything, if not because they can't, then because companies, like, they've acquired companies that have other monitoring tools. Their teams are so sprawling that each team has invented their own monitoring tool or implemented, right? All of this is still happening. And the end result is every year the costs get higher. Every year the complexity gets more, especially in a world where people are adopting containerization and AI, machine learning tools and workflows, and people are still reacting, right? People are still constantly, there's been this illusion of prevention, right? If you implement monitoring, you'll be able to prevent incidents, but that requires you to have the right people looking at the right tools, the right visuals, the right alerts at the right time and interpreting it the right way. Such as you're reacting a little bit before the business is impacted, but you're still reacting in a disruptive fashion. And I don't think this has materially changed. And, you know, we'll note a caveat in a second. I don't think this has materially changed in the past 8 years where you and I were working together on these tools.
Yeah, I don't disagree. When I worked in Fang, I worked at Meta for a few years. That organization has best in class today observability because they spent gobs of money to build it out. And even then, teams, if they don't have the necessary training, if they don't have the necessary awareness or just knowledge of how to use those tools, they don't benefit from them.
Hmm.
right? So there's a two-part issue here, which I think you've clearly described. One is you have to have the right tools to do the job. But then the other side of the argument is you need to have the proper training and enablement so that those tools can be used to their full potential. And you're right in saying that problem hasn't been solved consistently across organizations. You can pay for a vendor, you can choose a tool, but if you don't get your engineers, you know, enabled in how to use it, you're wasting money.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that you've just touched upon another issue, which is, you know, we were talking a lot about observability costs, and there's this vicious cycle that will go into the next part of our topic, right? There's this vicious cycle that we faced and that customers face every day, right? And here's how it looks. We are not monitoring effectively, so let's send more data or let's pay for more monitoring features. Right. Oh, wait, now we have too much monitoring. We're generating too many alerts, or our costs are going too high. Now you need to send less data or use fewer features, which means you're now going to miss issues. You're not going to have the data you need to troubleshoot effectively. And this vicious cycle continues over and over again, where people are either quote unquote monitoring too much or they're monitoring too little. And the end result in either scenario is high costs, high reactivity, high complexity. So we've seen two things emerge in the past few years out of this. One is the kind of unicorn-like growth of solutions like Cribble, right? So, you know, our legacy observability model, the ecosystem existed of two key components: telemetry generation at the source, and then telemetry ingestion, visualization, alerting, querying, all of that at the destination, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And in the past few years, we've seen the evolution of someone in the middle, a telemetry pipeline solution. So that's your Cribbles, your Edge Deltas, your Greppers, you know, and OpenTelemetry in gateway mode, right? It is a mechanism that was essential to put in between because so much data was being sent that these companies, these customers, needed a way to reduce it, to justify their cost, to make sure that the data they were sending was valuable, to route it to the right location, you know, cold storage for this, hot storage for that, to do transformation, sanitization, enrichment. So that's where we've seen a lot of value in the creation of a telemetry pipeline. But now you've introduced a man in the middle. You've introduced more complexity, additional cost, right? Another vendor. And that comes with degrees of complexity. So that's kind of one area we've seen evolution. The other is these SRE AIs, these root cause analysis AIs, these solutions that connect to your existing monitoring and tooling to try and help you figure out what's wrong. How do I fix it, right? So both of those kind of add-on solutions exist because the original ecosystem, the source telemetry generation and the all-in-one vendors, have been struggling to find a way to solve the cost problem, the value problem, to get people ahead of issues instead of just constantly reacting to them, right? And that's created a very, very complex ecosystem that's evolving as we speak.
Yeah. I think that's a good picture, a very clear one, and accurate in terms of what has changed over time. With OpenTelemetry, there has been this new paradigm of, well, I'm going to take all of my metric sources and I'm going to consume them using the same tool. So there is a consolidation of those three, but you still have to configure it, and that becomes complicated. Okay. So I think we have a more clear understanding in terms of the current present day challenges in observability, in terms of the limitations of the tools, and still the limitations of the process and the human involvement required. So what is your philosophy or current approach around addressing these problems today? I'm sure you have a lot to say on this subject, so I'm just going to tee it up for you. What do you see the future holding in terms of improving this state?
You know, I think we have to assume, right? You know, being capacity planners, we have to assume that current trends are going to continue in some fashion if left unaddressed, right? So let's look at the current trends. Complexity is getting more. Costs are getting more. Incidents are not necessarily going down. Reaction times are going down a little bit, you know, with innovations and AI, but you're still seeing a world with high complexity, high reactivity, high costs. So a lot of work needs to happen to start bringing those together. OpenTelemetry has done a great job on this. That community has moved mountains to try and get people away from proprietary monitoring towards you own your data, you manage it yourself. But there's still a gap that needs to be addressed. And, you know, so part of the opportunity here is what I would call right signal, right time. I'm not saying I invented that phrase. I'm just, you know, that's the one I'm going to use for right now. And I think probably one of the best solutions out there doing this is control theory, right? They're an example of a solution that's looking at the signals you're creating. They're sitting in the middle. They're watching what comes out, what goes to your vendor. They're seeing how it's used at your vendor. And then they're saying, you know what? Maybe you don't need to send this data anymore. Maybe you can send that at lower granularity unless there's a reason to send it. And I feel like that's the right approach. I feel like when we're talking about source generation, people are either sending too much data that's costing them unnecessarily, or they're not sending enough and they don't realize it. And we have to move towards a world where the system is adaptive, it's informed, it's helping you understand what needs to be monitored and how. So the future has to address the issue of telemetry creation, have telemetry generation built in more. And especially as we're building out, you know, more agentic workflows and people are vibe coding, we need to figure out a way to make sure that there's monitoring built in so that companies and teams and people that rely upon these tools know if it's healthy, know if it's secure, know if sensitive data is being leaked, right? No, to my knowledge, nobody's really addressing that problem well or at scale yet. But it feels like there are some emerging solutions there. So we're going to bucket that in one area of opportunity. The other area that is really needs to get addressed, and I'm finally starting to see more momentum on this in observability communities, is around insights over features, right? Insights over just raw data. So much of observability today is send us everything you can, all your information, your metrics, logs, traces, events, et cetera. We'll store it for a long time. We'll charge you through the nose to query it, to use it, to whatever, right? To have access to these features. But it's up to you as a human to interact with the system, to interpret the data correctly, to configure the right alerts. And there is a monumental amount of toil involved in that customization, that maintenance, the training of people, the building of tools on top of it. So when we step back and say, what would the future look like? Well, you know, we have to ask, why does it look the way it does today? So if we step back for a second and say, how did observability get to where it is now? You say, well, there were 25 problems that needed to be monitored. So we invented 25 different ways to monitor and bundled those together. We created solutions for each problem. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the real issue here, it's one question: is my system healthy? And if not, why? How do I fix it, right? That's, you have that one core problem and then those two underlying needs that come out of it. So now we say, okay, so if that really is observability, regardless of whether it's uptime and performance monitoring or security monitoring or cost monitoring, then how do we get to a world where a user or a team or a company can just know, is my platform healthy? And if not, why? And how do I fix it, right? That becomes the stream. And that's how we start getting into the notion of, you know, insights first observability or opinionated monitoring, right? Where the system is robust and intelligent enough that it can process raw telemetry and distill it down to the core nuggets of what you need to know from that data. What is the signal in the noise, right? And that's how you move away from that reaction, that high toil, high customization to, hey, we know that this metric is important for you because you're running technology X and this signal is stable, or this signal is indicating something is at risk of a problem later, or this signal is indicating there's a problem now. And we can use that signal and other signals to correlate it down to a very specific one or subset of root causes. And based on that, here is how you would solve it, right? And we're already starting to see a little bit of innovation in that. We talked about the RCA and the SREAIs. but they're facing challenges, right? So the challenges they're facing that are preventing this today is twofold, threefold, actually. One is these AIs don't necessarily have access to all the necessary data across tools. We mentioned customers rarely consolidate vendors, right? So the data is in multiple tools. The data, the, these models are being trained on junk garbage, which is a known problem in observability, right? It's mountains and mountains of bad data or useless data, right? And then the third problem is if you feed an LLM raw observability data, it'll choke, right? You can't feed it that much context. These things have limits, right? And if you're trying to say, hey, here's the entire history of all these logs, it breaks. So I mention all of this to say, if we want to move away from complexity, reactivity, and high cost, this isn't just a problem on the source and telemetry generation side. Mm-hmm. It's a process on the telemetry interpretation and reaction side, where a system has to exist that can take the data, whether refined or not, boil it down to this is what you need to know from your data. This is what it's trying to tell you. These are your issues. These are your risks. These are your optimization opportunities. And here is what caused them and how to fix them, right? Mm-hmm. And suddenly observability looks different, right? Suddenly you're now able to unify different data sources and say, this is the full picture and how I should respond to it. And I feel like that's how you get away from the complexity, the reactivity, and the high cost, and you move towards simplicity and prevention and affordability regardless of scale. So that to me feels like the two-pronged approach to solving today's observability problems.
Okay, that's interesting. So we're introducing some opinionated technology around arbitrary set of telemetry data, which ones are typically most important. Is that informed by, let's say, you know, the golden signals from Google, or what would you zero into if sent an arbitrary set of data?
I think it's an interesting question, you know, and I think it forces us to rethink what monitoring is and how it works. You know, you and I saw this issue when we implemented SignalFX, right? We said, let's implement CollectD, let's implement these plugins. We were generating over 250 new metrics with tens of thousands of dimensions when you factor it out, right?
Yeah.
And we did not realize we were sending too much data. There were a lot of low value signals, right? And we had to become experts in how to interpret them. So, you know, that implies that there is a subset for any given technology of critical signals that become important when there is a known issue, when there is sentiment in the data that something is wrong and something needs to be investigated and fixed or adjusted, right? Sure. So, you know, I see that as somebody has to create what I would call sequential reasoning, which is, I see that you are running these technologies. These technologies have their own unique golden signals that are relevant for diagnostics and understanding health. And if things look healthy, you only need three of them. If things are unhealthy, you might need 10, right? But this is how you interpret them. This is what normal looks like. This is how you compare to other people running the same technologies. And suddenly that context built into a product gives you the ability to understand how and when to react, right? Mm-hmm. Now, you and I saw this at a company we've worked at before, where having best-in-class observability tools in and of themselves wasn't enough because you were either sending too much data or sending too little. Are people reacting to it? You know, I recall we actually gave people free access to some observability functionality, and we couldn't convince them to use it. Right? We had end users that were given free observability, and they were too afraid of the cost implications and the complexity to implement it themselves. Right? Mm-hmm. So we had to, in order to scale our business, we together and a bunch of other really smart people had to essentially invent a paradigm where different signals were taken from these monitoring tools and from other sources, and they were looked at proactively and said, hey, we know what signals indicate there's going to be a problem, and we know how to interpret them when we see them. And what this means is you've done something incorrectly. You've essentially built a house that has windows that don't lock, or a foundation that's crumbling, or doors that are wide open, right? Like, we essentially had to create tooling on top of observability back then, because what we realized is reaction React, it, the world doesn't need to focus on reaction or faster reaction. We could actually prescribe to these development teams, if you do X, Y, and Z now, you won't have that issue later. So we were
Right.
able to figure out what signals were essential and how to interpret those signals in a repeatable fashion such that you could say incident prevention is not only possible, it's plannable. It's something you can work into your roadmap instead of it being another alert you have to treat as a fire. And I think that right there was the insight that's key to the future of observability, that if you move towards planned prevention instead of reaction, the world changes for these customers. It's just a matter of figuring out that sequential reasoning, that sequential logic that unblocks it.
That is interesting. It all goes back to preventative maintenance, right? You own a vehicle, you need to change your oil every 5,000 miles. You can't get away from it, of that fact. And yeah, back to golden signals. Like, most, if not all, production systems will have latency. They're going to have throughput. They're going to have saturation, right? And certain types of services, those are going to be more prominent, and some aren't. But with that information, you can then intuit, okay, I'm a web service. Yeah, latency matters, obviously. Error rate matters, obviously. Let's start there. Let's track that, and send alerts if there are anomalies or sharp increases in those metrics. Yeah, I think that makes sense. And as an SRE practitioner, if we had a mechanism that could just take arbitrary stream of data and say, hey, here's your error rate and latency, that's 50% of the work to getting to SLOs, which, from my view, is how you're able to decide whether or not a system is healthy or not in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, SLO, you mentioned another important one, which is SLOs. I feel like there's another opportunity there, right? Which is we've seen how alerts configured very reactively can lead to too much noise. SLOs help teams focus on just the signals that matter most, right? When should I react? But I feel like there's a need to move even further, right? Like, how do we identify things that are likely problems down the road and create an SLO mechanism for things that are high probability issues that you're bound to face based on the technologies you're using and the way you're building, right? So, I think SLOs have been a huge leap forward. I know you've been working with teams and products that make life easier for folks that are struggling with alerts.
Oh, yeah.
SLOs have been game changing there. I would say, how do we go even beyond SLOs, right? And how do we start helping people understand you don't have to react if you can prevent?
Right.
Right. And that to me feels like the real secret to, observability in the AI era.
Yeah, that makes sense. That should be the logical step forward. Instead of determining what's happening right now, are you able to determine what could happen in the future? Okay, so to wrap up, tell me more about this product that you're building, Otterman.ai. So you've been in the process of building for quite some time. So what specific problems are you trying to tackle with it?
It's funny, there are so many problems in observability, but you have to start with meeting customers where they're at and start making life better little by little. So for us, one of the biggest problems we see is solution sprawl, right? So many companies never, like I said, consolidate on that one vendor. So how can we first help them have a real single pane of glass? How can we help them connect their disparate tools, not just their monitoring solutions, but the DevOps tools they have? How can we combine their tribal knowledge with best practices for their technologies? So the first thing we're developing is a cross-vendor observability copilot. It's essentially a friend to sit in the seat next to you and answer your questions when you have questions and start raising insights to you as it finds things on its own. So this type of model helps customers start making their first steps away from just reaction towards prevention. So we're focused right now on just making sure, can we connect these really powerful disparate tools and start gleaning insights from their raw data? Can we start informing DevOps teams and security teams and operations teams and give them the insights they need to start getting ahead of future problems instead of just waiting for the next alert to come in? Can we help them solve issues a little bit faster by having a companion that understands the context of their business, right? So That's what we're starting out with. But longer term, we see a lot of potential in this. We believe that if you take something that's that reliable, that's that informed in both your tribal knowledge and best practices, you can essentially set it on, you know, not just a co-pilot, but autopilot. You can start moving towards a world where the system is proactively identifying issues, risks, and optimization opportunities and telling you this is a prioritized list of where you should spend your time now. We're seeing these problems. Here's the root cause. Here's the recommended solution. Start tackling these, and you'll probably see a world of difference, not just in your alert volumes, but in how much time your team is having to spend deep in the weeds of monitoring, how much time they're having to spend reacting to incidents, how much money they're spending on monitoring. If you're able to distill more insightful signal from the noise and send more data either to, as you and I used to say, la basura, right? Like send low value data to the trash, send high value data for long-term retention to cold storage, right? Really start cost optimizing the features you have. So for us, the challenge long-term is, can we prove that no matter how many vendors you have and how many solutions you're using and what tools you use, that observability could be boiled down to a single page interface that tells you where to focus your attention, why, what's wrong, what's going to be wrong, how to fix it in advance. That to me feels like the future, right? People spending less time in monitoring and more time innovating.
An ambitious goal. It is where the world needs to go. Yeah. Awesome. So if people are interested in reaching out to you, maybe they have a few questions about what it is that you're building and trying to accomplish, how can they reach out?
You know, I believe, like many people in this community, that this has to be a collaborative effort. So, you know, whether it's another observability vendor, another observability AI team, or just folks who are customers, DevOps, SREs, InfoSec, you know, these teams, people are starting to see how painful observability is. And if they want to be part of the solution or at least be informed of the progress we're making, reach out to us. Go to our website at ottermon.ai or reach out on LinkedIn and send us a message. Let us know that you're interested and let's figure out how to solve this problem together.
Awesome, man. Chico, so good to have you. Awesome
so to see you.
Reminisce and talk about past days and also looking forward to the future.
All right, likewise, my friend. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Thank you for listening to today's edition of Reliability Rebels. Until next time.
Check one, check two.
Reliability Rebels.
Check one, check two.
Reliability Rebels.
Check, 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 check.